This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, homegrown since 1982. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. The wake-up call is also brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news, on Newsstand Thursday. Now your host, Rick Moore.
And good morning, everybody. Thank you so much for tuning in to WNRN and the Wake Up Call. Thank you to L. Oppelman's for their support. L. Oppelman's continuously operated since 1890 at 909 Main Street in downtown Lynchburg. L. Oppelman's music department, now featuring guitars, bass, amp packages from Fender, with lifetime service included. They also have a selection of acoustic guitars and banjos, mandolins, effect amps, and repair parts. That's L. Oppelman, 909 Main Street in Lynchburg. And folks on Richmond's 103.1, hopefully you are tuning in. Let's everybody write down the phone numbers today, 979-0919 and 877-WNRN-ROCKS. That's a toll-free number. Send me an instant message at the WNRN studio on the AOL site. Let's see, our guest today, Dr. Mike. Mike, are you all set up over there?
I think so.
Dr. Mike Feetz from the Georgetown Veterinary Clinic here in Charlottesville, Virginia. I've got some questions and a few topics to discuss with Dr. Feetz. But the point of today's program is call in with your questions, maybe some things that you just didn't go to the vet for, or something that happened over the weekend, or something. Let's take advantage of the knowledge of Dr. Mike Feetz. Mike, a veterinary degree from Cornell University. How's Cornell?
Cold, very far away.
Very far away?
Very far away.
What brought you back to Charlottesville, or brought you to Charlottesville?
Brought me to Charlottesville. I came here pretty much blindly. It was a very random move, but it worked out well.
And Georgetown Veterinary Clinic recently got the Best of Charlottesville Award, I believe, from the other weekly news magazine
from
here
Seville
in town.
Weekly, we're very appreciative to Charlottesville for the support.
And you also have an article that came out, correct, that other news magazine?
Uh-huh.
People can go in there. We're going to put that link on the podcast site. So SevillePodcast.com will have our weekly podcast of today's show. We'll talk a little bit about that article shortly. Mike, I brought Lazarus with me to the studio.
He's nuzzling me as we speak.
Yes, regular listeners are aware of Lazarus, my now senior. We'll call him a senior dog. He's a plot hound. The legend of Lazarus is he lost his battle with a bear. That's what plot hounds are trained to do, is to tree bears. He's blind in one eye, lost a bit of his hearing, a little small chunk out of his nose, etc. But there aren't many who can win the battle with the bears.
No, he's done well, and he's a sweetheart.
Older dogs, it's one of the things I wanted to talk about, is senior dogs or cats, because people think about dementia as something for the elderly and their families.
Right.
But it applies to pets as well, correct?
Yeah, it does. We'll see them go through that, and it's hard for people to watch, just like it's hard for people to watch when their family and friends go through it. And they all do it differently. Some it can be rather severe. Others it's just slightly strange behavior here and there. But we definitely see them go through that.
When you talk about strange behavior, what are some signs of this as a possibility?
Yeah, anything that seems, animals are so pattern-based and they're so routine, and when people start seeing those routines change, it usually means something's going on. And I've had people describe, whether it be severe behavioral changes, things that they've never seen the dog do before, to just kind of strange stuff, staring at walls for minutes at end and barking at seemingly nothing. They can do some odd things.
Well, I've seen them, and I feel like I told somebody else this. You know, fortunately, Lazarus can't hear well. Because sometimes I feel like I'm, you know, when your parents talk about you in front of other people or in front of you to other people, you know, while your child is going, Mom! And I feel like that with Lazarus sometimes. But he has a behavior of the past year where he will put his... You know, his prop his head on the back of his sofa area, and just sort of stare off. And you know, sometimes I'm like, is he bored, or is that a sign of his increasing age?
It's tough to say. Maybe it's just something that he did one day and realized he likes it, and now he enjoys doing it. I mean, if that's the only change you've seen, I probably wouldn't immediately assume that it's dementia. If we started to see other things, maybe, but he may just enjoy looking out the window. He may find it peaceful.
It is looking out the window.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that's it does prop up against the window.
Uh-huh.
Although with a dog with such poor eyesight, I'm not sure exactly what he would be looking at.
It's tough to know. Yeah, maybe he just enjoys the color.
Dr. Mike Feetz here from Georgetown Veterinary Clinic, 979-0919-877-WNRN Rocks. You can also send us an instant message question. I got one earlier. Today, Mike, from T. Carey. I know dogs aren't supposed to eat chocolate, but my dog seemed to love it, or at least the smell of it. Once she ate a couple chocolate chips that were dropped on the floor, and now she goes crazy every time she smells it. Is it okay for her to have a very small bit? She's a Jack Russell.
The short answer is always no. I mean, the reality with chocolate toxicity is it's very dose dependent. And while it is toxic to dogs, and I wouldn't push the envelope, should the dog accidentally get some, unless it's a substantial amount, usually it's not going to be a big deal. Chocolate chips are milk chocolate and, fairly low in theobromine, which is the compound that causes the toxicity to begin with. When it comes down to it, chocolate toxicity is very similar to a caffeine overdose. You know, in moderate amount, typically you're not going to see much more than restlessness, maybe urinating more. But as the dose gets higher, you'll see vomiting and stomach upset. And then if it gets really high, you can really see muscle tremors and seizures and a racing heart rate that can get dangerous. But I wouldn't deliberately give the dog chocolate. But, you know, if a few chocolate chips fall on the floor and the dog scarfs them down, it really shouldn't be that bad.
But no feeding, no sharing your Reese's peanut butter cup.
It's not the best habit to get into. Like I said, in a small amount, it'd be fine. But, you know, kind of like he's noted, the dog now likes chocolate, which may up the odds of the dog getting into it or seeking it out in the house. And that it may just be setting up a bad situation for the future. So yeah. I feel bad encouraging it. But at the level it sounds like it's at right now, it shouldn't be a big deal.
Okay.
Yeah.
Again, Dr. Mike Feetz from Georgetown Veterinary Clinic. Call in with your questions. I see the 979-0919 line is lit. Please keep dialing in. The toll-free number, 877-WNRN-ROCKS. Dial us up. Mike, here's a question. Roxanne has a 10-year-old border collie mix with a scratching problem due to fungus. Currently using oral meds and is on steroids. What else should she do?
If it's a fungal infection of the skin, those infections are very rarely happening on their own, and most of those dogs are dealing with underlying allergy problems. And I can't say that for sure in this case, but there's a pretty high likelihood of it. The yeasts that infect dogs' skin more often than not exist everywhere, and they're exposed to them all the time. And it's a problem at the dog's end that's allowing it to take hold. Getting those allergies under control, if it's severe enough, may be the only way to really do it. And that's a topic that could probably cover an entire show. Allergies usually are a first target in those cases.
All right. Angie taking the first call or taking another call, 1109 here on the Wake Up Call. Don't forget, we have two lines here. Anybody can use the toll-free number, 877-967-6762. That's 877-WNRN-ROCKS. Dial us up. The 979-0919 number should be available in just a minute. Keep trying. Take advantage of Dr. Mike Feetz, small animal veterinarian at Georgetown Veterinary Hospital. Mike, how does a vet work on bedside manner. Because people talk regularly about whether or not they like the doctor.
Sure.
You know, the bedside manner of a human based physician or
sure.
specialist. But how do you do that as a small animal vet?
I'm not sure it's something I think much about. I think it's one of those things, if you're having to put effort into it, maybe you're doing it wrong. I think just assuming that anyone that comes in, be it the dog or the cat or the person that's with them, you know, just engaging them as people and animals that they are is really all you need to do.
Is there a thought process that goes into it, as, you know, to the caretaker, the human, mm-hmm. the owner first, as opposed to the animal?
I think it's very, I mean, barring an emergency where you need to respond instantly, I think it's very much taking the entire situation at once. And, you know, animals respond best if they don't feel like they're in a completely clinical setting, I think. And that's a large part of it. And I think people respond best if they don't feel like they're in a completely clinical setting as well. I think just trying to make it feel as natural and normal to everyone involved is really the heart of it.
I've noticed when Lazarus and I go to Georgetown, that cats come in mm-hmm. in their carriers,
yeah.
and some small dogs do as well, uh-huh. but cats come in their carriers. Suggestions for cat owners and ways to get the cat in the carrier in the easiest manner possible?
It's not always easy. Some cats are, in fact, I'd say even most of them are great. They hop in pretty easily or with just minor direction. Some absolutely know where that carrier is going and they'll put up a fight. From our end, trying to make the experience as relaxing as we can for the cat is certainly part of it. But that's not easy to do. And cats, they're afraid when they come in sometimes, and that's how they react. And it's easy for that to escalate into a tough situation. If there are, this is tough with cats. They're not like dogs where you take them to dog parks and fun places. You know, most cats mostly hang out at home, and it's very rare for them to go into a carrier if they're going somewhere they want to go. Same basic rules apply. Trying to make it as positive and non-combative as possible, I think, is important.
As a vet and me being I love cats. I enjoy uh-huh. cats around, but I don't happen to take care of any cats. Mm-hmm. So when the cats come in, do you like put on fire gloves
only,
or something?
Only rarely. Most cats are actually very pleasant. They come in, they trot around the table, they purr, they nuzzle you. Similar to dogs, I think part of it is examining them without knowing they're being examined. If it feels to them like a relaxing petting session while you're feeling their belly and looking in their mouth and looking at their eyes, then it goes a lot smoother. But most cats are actually very good. I think the kind of stereotype of the angry fire-breathing cat, they happen, but they're happily an extreme minority of the cats that we see.
Is there a different personality that mm-hmm. you notice between cat owners and dog owners?
Not entirely. I think in a lot of cases the decision is just made on their life circumstance at the time rather than anything else. People who are very busy and aren't home very often choose to get a cat instead of a dog just because they do require a lot less constant presence and constant work. I don't think I've seen much of a trend otherwise. And a lot of people have both. I've got one of each, and I've always liked that dynamic of having one of each.
Take advantage of the open phone line now for Dr. Mike Feetz from Georgetown Veterinary Hospital here in the Charlottesville area, which was recently voted best, what was the title? Best animal?
Just veterinary hospital.
Best veterinary mm-hmm. hospital. Here's a call about liver cancer. Why has there been a current rise in liver cancer in dogs? Once you see the symptoms, and I'm curious as to what those are, mm-hmm. what can you do to prevent it?
Sure. To prevent it is tough to say. I'm not sure if there has been an increase in liver cancer so much as an increase in detection. And I think this is, this is something that's true of medicine in general. Things can apparently become more common just because they weren't diagnosed before. Now that more and more hospitals have very easy access to diagnostics like x-rays and ultrasound, it's far easier to find it than it used to be, I think. you know, it's often a very sad diagnosis because in some cases there's really not much to do. In other cases, you know, while there may be ways to respond, they may be very aggressive or extremely expensive, and people may just not choose to have their animals go through that. But as far as prevention, there's really no specific thing I could recommend. There's no magic bullet or food or anything like that that's gonna make it happen less often.
Well, you talk about better detection, mm-hmm. And I don't know if this applies to dogs as much as to humans, but mm-hmm. there have been articles and discussions about the increase in Lyme's disease mm-hmm. sort of moving mm-hmm. from the north down to south. Am I going in the correct?
Well, it was certainly originally found in the north. I mean, it's named after a city in Connecticut, I think. At this point, my understanding is it's fairly endemic across the country. We certainly see no shortage of it here. We do diagnose it frequently, largely because of increased routine screening. The recommendation is that animals are screened annually for it, so we stay pretty alert to the possibility of Lyme's disease, and we can respond very readily. The good news in dogs, while it's the same infection that people get, it behaves very differently in dogs, and with exceptions that are certainly worth noting but are happily rare, most cases of Lyme's disease are fairly minor in dogs and very, very easily treated. But we do see tons of it in town, and so it is something that we recommend. I'm looking for.
11:16 here on the Wake Up Call with our guest today, Dr. Mike Feetz from Charlottesville's Georgetown Veterinary Hospital. Call up, take advantage of Mike's knowledge. 979-0919. That's 979-0919. The toll free number if you need it, 877-967-6762. Angie's here answering the phones. Mike, here's a question that I got, and we were talking about cats, whether mm-hmm. they're indoor or outdoor cats. My neighbor sprays toxins around his yard for plants and insects. Do I need to worry about my cats going outside, possibly through the area that's been sprayed, and then coming back inside and grooming themselves?
It's tough to say. It depends on exactly what's being sprayed. I would recommend being cautious, certainly for, you know, the immediate number of days following the spraying. I think it's best to probably keep the cats indoors just in case. The answer varies so much depending on what's being sprayed, but without knowing, I would, you know, just blanket the answer with yes, you should be concerned. How concerned is tough to say. I would probably keep them in, you know, in those first few days. Other than that, I think the primary danger to most of those compounds is animals actually getting into the source of it, you know, getting into the actual container and being exposed to a large amount of it at once. You know, once things are out on, you know, on plants and in the environment, they're going to be, just by nature of applying it that way, in much lower concentration. So, you know, any risk is decreased, but I wouldn't call it zero.
You know, that question brings up mm-hmm. some, I guess, just some memory. There was a recent article and mm-hmm. I guess in The Hook about some VDOT subsidiary subcontractor mm-hmm. who had been accused of spraying Roundup, a much more, mm-hmm. I don't want to say deadly because that's not the right word, but a chemical that has a much greater damage to the plants mm-hmm. in the area rather than something else that had been approved. I don't remember what that was. Mm-hmm. So you talk about whether or not, you know, what the chemical is. If you walk over and ask your neighbor, hey, are you spraying Roundup? Mm-hmm. And can you tell me, you know, like with beekeepers, they tell you when
sure.
the government is going to spray something so that you can do something to your
right.
To the bees. Do you mm-hmm. can you work out something like that? Do you think that's the best way to do it?
I mean, it may depend on the relationship you have with your neighbor. I think what's difficult is you know, approaching them in a way that doesn't sound accusatory, certainly, you know, just saying, making it clear, I just want to do the right thing by my pets. So can you just let me know what you're using and when so that I can do that? I'll take the opportunity to say, I mean, certainly the veterinary recommendation is that you keep your cats inside. The difference in lifespan between an indoor cat and a cat that goes outside is pretty striking. And certainly the difference in what we see them go through is pretty striking. I mean, I honestly think I'd see cats about half as often as I do if they stayed inside. It's a lot of puncture wounds and hit by cars and, you know, tragedies that don't happen indoors.
Is it? That brings to mind a question about feral cats.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know you can go to the local SPCA, mm-hmm. and my memory, often incorrect, is that you can adopt feral cats, like bring them from where they have been found, mm-hmm. or whether they're at the SPCA, and bring them to your home to continue to be outdoors,
sure.
And live the life of that, but while you can provide them with regular
right.
food and some sort of shelter.
Mm-hmm.
Your thoughts on that?
Well, it's you know, in cases where you have a cat, I mean, obviously these are domestic cats, but many of them have been born and raised outdoors and have really just learned to exist as wild animals. And that's what makes the cat overpopulation problem so difficult, is they're a tremendously successful species just living outdoors. They're very good at reproducing and just living without human help, which is something we don't see in dogs. You know, for the ones that just there's no way they can be domesticated, and obviously, you know, you work with what you've got. And in those cases, you know, it seems unfair to assume we should euthanize all of them. But, you know, in cases like that may be the only option. And I certainly, even outside of extreme cases like that, I'll have owners with cats that do have to live outside. You know, while it may be not ideal as a blanket recommendation, I've had cases where, you know, the cat is either tremendously destructive or, you know, has been deemed to be a danger to the children in the house or any circumstance like that. And while it may not be ideal, in those cases, you find other solutions and do have them spend most of their time outside.
11:21 on the wake up call. We'd love to hear your question on air. I like to hear other voices besides my own. You don't have to pass all your questions through Angie or online. 979-0919 877 WNRN Rocks. Talking with Dr. Mike Feetz from Charlottesville's Georgetown Veterinary Hospital. I see the phone ringing now. Thank you very much. You're also available, again, the toll-free number, which is currently open, 877-WNRN-ROCKS, 1122 on the wake-up call. Markets of Tiger Fuel forecast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley. Mostly cloudy, 40% chance of showers today, highs in the upper 70s. And then mostly cloudy tonight with a 30% chance of showers, lows 60 to 65. And then tomorrow, mostly sunny in the valley and in Lynchburg, but always a chance of showers a little bit, highs in the mid-80s. Right now, it's a clear day, 70 in the valley, 67 in Lynchburg, 70 in Richmond, 73 in Charlottesville.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, homegrown since 1982. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And let me thank Dixon Disposal for their support. Dixon Disposal, family-owned and operated for 40 years. Dixon works to promote green awareness. Dixon Disposal offers all-in-one can recycling, so you won't have to spend time sorting or trying to figure out which items are recyclable. These recyclable items won't end up in the landfill, because for more information on the all-in-one can recycling, DixonDisposal.com or call them 978-2111. All right, and we have a call from James here in Charlottesville. Hey, James.
Hey, how you doing, bro?
I'm well. You got a question for Dr. Feetz?
My dog, he likes table food, and I'm just wondering, you know, he don't want to eat his dog food anymore, and I was wondering if there's any kind of pill that you can give him to, so he can get his vitamins that he needs out of the dog food, you know, the dog food would provide for him.
Sure. I think at the start, the recommendation is usually to try and get them to eat dog food. And in some cases that involves some tough love. I mean, spending a few days, you know, making sure they get nothing but dog food. I mean, most dogs won't just turn their nose at food indefinitely, and eventually they'll get hungry enough that they'll say, if this is what I have to eat, this is what I have to eat. You know, depending on the home, that can be difficult. I know, you know, especially if there's children in the home or if there's just someone in the house that likes giving him the table food, it may be tough to teach that lesson. You know, in cases where people are feeding, you know, I hesitate to say their own diet, because in this case it sounds a little bit more accidental than that. You know, using a prepared vitamin can certainly help cover over some of the cracks as far as, you know, are you sure he's getting all the nutrients? And any pet store sells, you know, normal just multivitamins for dogs. You know, for a typical dog on a regular maintenance dog food, that shouldn't be necessary because most of those foods are supplemented pretty well with those sorts of things already. But, you know, in a case like this, there could certainly be some benefit to that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I have one more question.
Sure.
I noticed he like be eating grass sometimes,
yeah.
Just biting on it, mm-hmm. And you know he don't seem to be sick or anything. He's just eating on grass sometimes.
Yeah, as long as he's not acting sick, that's fine. My dog likes grass too. I mean, anytime he walks past tall stalks of grass, he's got to munch on them. And for most dogs, that's completely normal behavior. If you see it, you know, causing vomiting or diarrhea or anything like that, then it's worth worrying about. My only other concern about eating grass is that a dog that eats grass is going to be more prone to eating other things. So if he stumbles into a toxic mushroom or something like that, then he may be more inclined to eat it. So it may not be the best habit in the world, but in general, eating grass is not a problem for dogs.
All right, James, thanks for the call, man.
Yes, sir.
All right. Phone lines open for Dr. Feetz and your questions. Take advantage of Pet Questions for the Vet, 979-0919. That's 979-0919. That line is open. So is the toll-free 877-967-6762, the toll-free 877-WNRN-ROCKS. We're talking about James asking about food, and table food versus
yep.
dog food. The difference between wet food and dry food
uh-huh.
for any animal, well,
mm-hmm.
I mean, do they exist for any particular reason? I mean, does an animal get more out of, you know, something
no.
out of one that they don't get out of the other?
Not in general. I mean, there may be special instances where that's the case. But by and large, no. A lot of the variety that exists in foods has more to do with giving people choice than giving the animals any different benefits. You know, if a dog prefers canned food...
But one stinks and the other one doesn't.
The canned food does stink. As a blanket rule, we usually recommend dry foods. They tend to be better for dogs' teeth than cats' teeth. That's not perfect protection, it won't magically keep the tartar away, but it certainly minimizes it or makes it lesser. There are cases where we may recommend a canned food depending on a dog's particular medical problem, though.
All right, 877-WNRN-ROCKS is open. But we have Carol from Fluvanna. Well, hello, Carol.
Hello.
You got a question for Dr. Feetz?
I do. I have a couple of questions regarding senior dogs.
Uh-huh.
And so I have two that are, we'll just say vintage, because they're right here. But and both of them are now drinking more water as they get older.
Uh-huh.
And I was just wondering, is that something that I should be concerned about, or?
It is. Not necessarily terrified about, but I would get it looked into. For a lot of dogs, that increased drinking as they get older turns out to be nothing, and it is just that they want to drink more water. Unfortunately, the list of other possibilities is worth checking out. You know, especially in older dogs, drinking more can be evidence of kidney disease. It can be evidence of diabetes. You know, there's a short but well-defined list of things that can cause dogs to drink more. And if nothing else, if they're older, it's worth the peace of mind of just ruling those things out. If it turns out that as they've gotten older, they just like water more, then that's great. But I think it's worth checking out.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, that's good to know.
Mm-hmm.
And my other question is one of my dogs, he doesn't have teeth anymore.
Uh-huh.
but sometimes he refuses to eat soft food.
Yeah.
And you know, and I'll do the whole just leaving it down, and that's
mm-hmm.
all his only choice, and he still will just refuse it. But he will eat hard food, and I know he's not chewing it.
Yeah.
I mean, is that a problem for him? I mean, I make sure he has lots of water so
sure.
he can digest it, but...
I would say generally no. I mean, as long as he doesn't seem to be bothered by eating the hard food. I mean, if it were causing him to throw up because he's not chewing the kibble, or, you know, if it were causing some other symptoms, then maybe. But it seems strange that he likes it. But if that's what he prefers, as long as it's not causing any harm, I think that's fine. You know, once it's in there and mixed with water and everything, it's going to get digested just the same.
Okay.
Yeah. Hey, Mike. Thank you. Carol, thanks for the call, by the way. Have a great day.
Thanks, you too. Bye-bye.
Mike, in that situation, can you grind it up a little bit? I mean, can you smash the kibble, you know, down, or put it in your little spice seed blender, you know, and
I'd probably avoid pulverizing it. I'd be afraid that in their enthusiasm to eat it, they'd end up inhaling all the dust. You know, either breaking it down or adding water might soften it a little bit. But, in that regard, I'd say take the dog's lead. Whatever they're happy with is fine by me.
Obviously has a great nose and understands that the wet food is so stinky. I don't want to put that in my mouth. 11:30 on the wake-up call, Dr. Mike Feetz here with us from Georgetown Veterinary Hospital. Call up with your questions, like James or Carol, or earlier on we had T. Carey, 979-0919. That line is open, 877-WNRN-ROCKS. Support for WNRN today comes from Virginia Chili Blues and Brews Festival in downtown Waynesboro on September 22nd from 3 until 10 p.m. You can enter now for the People's Choice Chili Cook-Off. Virginia Blues and Brews will be a day full of live music courtesy of the Coors Light Blues Stage, plus Mega and Micro Brews. Chef spots are limited, but you can register and learn about prizes at virginiachili.com. That's because things are going to get hot. All right, back with our guest, Dr. Mike Feetz. Mike, I had somebody catch up with me online. I guess you made mention of while eating grass, you could eat other things. And who is this from? Oh, this is from Buxt04. Let me read this properly. Buxton, a mastiff, recently started eating other animals' poop. Deer, geese, dog. We run across while on walks. I try to stop her. Is this a nutritional issue? Trying to make up for vitamins missing from her diet. I did change food a few months before this started happening.
It's generally not a nutritional issue. It's usually just awful habit. You know, it may be worth switching back to the old food just to see what happens, but it may not help. What's frustrating in these cases is there's not a lot of solution other than trying to avoid it. You know, if you've got
avoid it like a quick yank on the, you know, on the leash.
Yeah, but it's tough to watch them all the time. And if you're taking them hiking and they're off leash, I mean, they're going to get into things. It's hard. I mean, animals poop.
And I would think with a mastiff, that's also hard.
And you know, that's where animals use the bathroom. And the risk isn't high, other than being disgusting. But it's certainly a way to catch things. Most of them are simple things like worms. You know, if you're keeping the dog on a routine heartworm preventative, that'll already minimize a lot of the risk of actual symptomatic parasites. It doesn't eliminate it, but it reduces it. And then otherwise, in those dogs, you know, if it's a constant problem, I'll usually recommend checking a stool sample a couple times a year just to screen for any trouble. And certainly, if you see diarrhea, you know, drop a sample off at your vet and just get it checked out. So the consequences generally aren't dire. It's mostly just that it's disgusting.
As disgusting as it sounds.
Yeah,
no doubt. you know, talking about wet food versus dry food, again, dial us up with your questions, 979-0919. Brushing of pets' teeth.
Yep.
Almost every time when I take Lazarus to the vet for teeth issues, when I leave, I'm handed a toothbrush and some dog acceptable toothpaste.
Yep.
And every time we try that once, and this animal who's typically slow and methodical and very accepting
finds new spirit, huh?
Is like, you know, whips his head. Oh, it's, you know, cannot. I would need like three other people to help me brush his teeth.
Yep.
How do you, is there a way to make this happen in a simpler, more accepting manner?
No. And, you know, toothbrushing is one of those things I put in the the box of here's what we should all be doing in the ideal world, and here's the world we actually live in. You know, medically, I absolutely recommend that people brush their animals' teeth every day, at the very least every other day, if you're actually going to have any benefit. When you start falling below every other day, you really start falling behind the accumulation of tartar, and the effect becomes pretty much worthless. You know, people will mean well and they'll do it every week or two, but it's actually just a waste of time. The reality, though, is a lot of dogs just won't let you brush their teeth. So in the same breath that I say I recommend it, I'll be the first to admit that I cannot brush my own dog's teeth. I mean, he's a very nice dog, but he just fusses so badly while we do it that it's just not worth the stress or the trouble. And, you know, he's one that he was very young when we started trying to do it. He just didn't like it. And so I always recommend trying. It's certainly the best thing you can do for their teeth by a pretty wide mile, but I don't think you need to feel like a bad person if you've tried it and it just doesn't work out.
Are there tips on, you know, ways to calm the animal? Are there particular breeds of dogs, or good Lord, I can't even imagine trying to brush a cat's teeth.
Yeah, cats are, and I do have owners that do it, and I absolutely commend them. You know, I assume that's a combination of the owner's dedication and the cat being very well behaved. You know, with dogs, I mean, there's always going to be breed differences. Maybe even not behaviorally, functionally. You know, if you have a pug, it's very hard to lift the lips on a pug without pushing their lips straight into their eyes, and that may make brushing their teeth more uncomfortable. And that's unfortunate because a lot of the little dogs are the ones that really, really need the toothbrushing most. Larger breed dogs, for various reasons, just have healthier teeth in general, and they're ironically the ones where it would be easier to brush their teeth if you wanted to. The small dogs can make it difficult. You know, like anything, you know, anytime you're trying to do something with an animal that they find unpleasant, whether it be toothbrushing or nail clipping or any of the other kind of infernal chores of owning a pet, trying to make it as positive as you can is worth doing. And that's, you know, a lot of the dog toothpaste, you know, they're flavored like beef and chicken, and that's, you know, part of the attempt to make it pleasurable for them, but a lot really just don't enjoy it.
It should be flavored with peanut butter.
There you go.
11:36 on the wake-up call. Dr. Mike Feetz with us. Phone lines open, 979-0919. Call us up with your question about your pet. For Dr. Feetz. Mike, I got one here. How do I know if my cat is getting enough exercise?
Their weight will be under control, for one. Overweight cats have become so common, it's hard to even pick them out of a crowd anymore. Most cats are overweight at this point.
Is that due to cat food?
Well, it's due to the amount that they eat, and the fact that most cats are fairly sedentary. You know, they don't do a whole lot. And even, you know, cats that are fairly playful, I mean, they don't generally work themselves up into an aerobic situation like dogs do if you take them for a run. You know, they don't really get much cardio. And as a result, they have a very low calorie requirement per day. Unfortunately, a lot of cats are extremely insistent on eating more.
Most people that I know put food in the bowl.
Yep.
Because I guess the theory being that cats won't eat more than they need to.
Yeah, I've got a lot of proof that theory doesn't work.
And, really?
Just looking at the number of overweight cats, cats will almost always overeat if given the opportunity. It's a pretty rare cat that regulates themselves well, and it is important that you measure out the amount you're giving the cat.
What if you have multiple cats?
That makes it really difficult. And it's hard enough to control weight when you've got one cat. I feel very bad for owners when they've got multiple cats and one or more of them are overweight, because suddenly it becomes very difficult. Trying to arrange the situation so they eat separately is ideal. And that may be easy enough if the cats eat quickly. You know, some cats, you put their food down and they wolf it down. Others eat a little bit, they come back later. The grazers are harder to control because there's always going to be food in someone's bowl. If they eat quickly, you can feed them all separately and then that's it. There's no more food around. As far as trying to exercise cats, it's tough. I mean, you can't take them out for a run.
I tried that one time with a friend.
How'd it go?
Well, you know, she had a small, I mean, something that was designed for a cat.
Uh-huh.
And she'd bought in a small
yeah.
size that would work. And this was a cat who was very active.
Uh-huh.
And you may be familiar with Katie Chester's
uh-huh.
Pepe.
Yep.
And so we went out and everything was going great until all of a sudden a dog was, I mean, a good 50 yards away.
Uh-huh.
But the cat became aware of it.
Yeah.
And, like, just tore
yeah.
out of this leash
yeah.
outfit. And fortunately, my reactions were good that day, and I pounced down and caught Pepe before he got too far. But, oh, my God.
Yeah. I you know, it's funny you mentioned that. I do, not many. Like you said, most cats come into the hospital in a carrier. But we definitely have a few that come trotting in happily on their leash and their harness. And if you have a cat like that, that's fantastic. You can take them for walks. You know, for typical cats, you know, you've got things like laser pointers, trying to get them active with, you know, things like that. You know, you do try to keep them moving, you know, just, you know, do play with them. You know, I think it's easy to own a cat and never play with them. You know, cause they're just so easy to own. I think it's easy to forget that they do need interaction in order to stay healthy.
11:40 on the wake up call. I'm having some sort of bad memory of Pepe out in the, almost getting lost in the woods for Lord knows how long. Dr. Mike Feetz here from Georgetown Veterinary Clinic, 979-0919. I see that line's on hold at the moment, which means that the toll-free number's open, 877-WNRN-ROCKS.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by the Market for Tiger Fuels and by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news, on Newsstands Thursday. Here's Rick on what you can find on this week's Hook.
And this week, returning UVA students may be told that the controversy over the firing of President Teresa Sullivan ended back in June, but many ask why Rector Helen Dreges is still at the helm, and what will it take to bring integrity back to the university. In a few more weeks, the Dalai Lama will visit Charlottesville, but why were the tickets so pricey, and why wouldn't UVA sponsor the event? And it would at an age when most girls have switched from Little League to softball, a local girl is doing more than still playing baseball with the boys. She's showing them how it's done. That's The Hook, every week. And thanks goes out to your Anthem Blue Cross and Blue Shield authorized agent, Herb Bennett. As your local agent in Central Virginia, Herb provides expert knowledge and personal service in designing your individual health insurance plan. Your health is worth protecting, and you shouldn't let it go uninsured. For a quote, you can give Agent Herb Bennett a call, 855-425-0090, or you can visit online, agentherb.com. And we also want to thank Blue Ridge Graphics for supporting us today. You can find Blue Ridge Graphics at Meade Avenue and East High Street in Charlottesville. They provide custom T-shirts and sportswear, plus promotional items for schools, organizations, and businesses. That's Blue Ridge Graphics, 296-9746, or brgtshirts.com. All right, we got a call from Michelle. Hey, Michelle, you with us?
Hey, Rick.
Hey, got a question for Dr. Feetz.
Yes, I do. First, I've got a tip for people with overweight kitties. Take a feather and tie it on a string about 2 feet long. Tie it on a stick and go catfishing, and you can, you know, jerk it around the room and get your kitty to jump in the air like a fish out of water, and it's fun, and somebody can just sit there and do it if they don't want to exercise.
I'm all in favor of catfishing.
Catfishing, that's what I called it. It's been about almost, it's over 6 years since I had a kitty. I nursed her through renal disease,
mm-hmm.
and almost ready. I loved her that much. Almost ready to get another one, and would like to know your recommendation for the best possible diet to start them on
mm-hmm.
from the get-go.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for your help.
Yeah, you're very welcome. This is a common question with people that have had cats that have experienced kidney failure. One of the reasons it's a common question is that the treatment for kidney failure often involves a diet change. What that's done is create kind of the false impression that the diet was a problem to begin with, it's not. Regardless of what food you pick, there really isn't going to be any lasting effect on how likely the next cat is to go into kidney failure or at what age it's going to happen. So while it's something that's managed dietarily when it happens, it is not something that you're going to be able to prevent by choosing a different diet early. I think one of the most common things I see is, and you'd asked before, Rick, about canned diets versus dry diets, and we frequently use canned diets in cases of kidney failure because it just puts more moisture into their diet, which is helpful for cats that have kidney disease. It doesn't work the other way around, and giving them that moisture in advance doesn't prevent the kidneys from having trouble. It's just a useful reaction, not a preventative thing. So this is a frustrating answer for a lot of owners because there isn't going to be a magic diet to pick that fixes this.
Well, Michelle, I hope you're ready, I hope Mike's answer, puts you on board for getting your next cat.
That's very exciting. I wish you good luck with your new cat.
11:44 here on the Wake Up Call, taking questions about your pets. Dr. Mike Feetz, a veterinary degree from Cornell University, currently at Georgetown Veterinary Hospital, which was recently voted the best of in the Seville Weekly. Mike, here's a question that's going to lead me to a handful of others. So if you want to get your question in, 979-0919, 877-WNRN-ROCKS. I'm not sure who this is from, but Angie brought it in to me. Dog has stress-related digestion problems, such as diarrhea. How can you reduce a dog's stress level?
Well, it depends on what they're stressing about. For kind of long-term pervasive stress, it's hard to know what's stressing the dog out. It's very easy to say try and avoid what's stressing them out, but that may be harder to put into practice depending on exactly what it is. That really is the key. When you're talking about reducing stress in a dog, just trying to avoid the things that stress them. If it's separation anxiety, then that may involve, and I can sympathize with that one because my own dog deals with it. It involves a lot of training and environmental manipulation to reduce it. It's time consuming and it's frustrating. Otherwise, common anxieties are, dogs who board at a kennel will get anxiety related diarrhea. Thunderstorms can do it. And there's such a long list of it. For the more sporadic ones, we typically find ourselves just, reacting when it happens and getting it under control. But if it's happening all the time, I think it's worth looking into the exact causes of that stress and trying to limit them, but B, making sure there isn't more going on than just stress-related diarrhea. It's pretty rare for a dog to have that problem all the time if they're stressed all the time.
You mentioned thunder, uh-huh. Separation anxiety.
Yeah.
Lazarus, as much as I love him, completely freaked out by a thunderstorm,
yeah.
And I understand that that's not unusual.
Nope.
But are there ways to handle...
Yeah.
Those sorts of things. Like, I know that they make some sort of vest
mm-hmm.
that's designed to help dogs during thunderstorms.
Yep.
Do those things work?
They
and
can.
Are there other ways?
They can work. I actually bought one for my dog to Hope, and it didn't do much for him, but I've had plenty of clients have luck with them. And they're not magic. They just they're tight and snug, and it makes them feel more cozy and secure, basically. There's nothing mystical about them, but that can help. And you can even try just a reasonably well-fitting t-shirt you can put on the dog and see how they do with that as well. Part of it is not responding during a thunderstorm as if something is wrong. They take cues from us, and while our human instinct is to, comfort them and be there for them, sometimes that just teaches them that there is something bad happening and there is something to be afraid of. Sometimes really the best thing to do is often to go about your day as if nothing's wrong.
All right, we got a couple people. I'm going to take Ashley's call first. Sherry, please bear with me. 11:48 on the Wake Up Call with Dr. Mike Feetz. Ashley, you're with us. Question for...
I moved in with my stepmom to go to college a couple years ago, or 4 years ago, and I think I took the cat's room, and my son and I moved in, and his room used to be the room that the litter boxes were in.
Uh-huh.
And every time... If we go out of town or if the door gets left open,
yeah.
It's usually either if there's a bag open or he has a futon on the bottom of his bunk bed and the cat finds the futon. And we don't really know which one it is, but there's one that really doesn't like us.
Yeah.
But and she ends up, we think it's her, But do you have any ideas to try to prevent this other than closing the door? Should we always just let the cat stay out of there?
Yeah.
Thanks, Ashley.
This is tough, and this is something I've dealt with my own cat as well. So I can sympathize with how incredibly annoying this is. The solution really often is to close that door and to prevent access to the things that are targets. If the things are very easy to identify, you may be able to set up the environment so that those things are no longer inviting. In my own house, after getting a new couch, I had used just aluminum foil on the couch for a little while to train the cat that going on the couch wasn't something she wanted to do. It just crinkles under their feet and upsets them, so they jump off again. I think I've told the story on here before. My cat also had the awful habit of peeing in my bed, which was obviously untenable, and we ended up handling that by I feel more absurd every time I tell this story, but I basically made just a huge network of masking tape and laid it out over the bed sticky side up, and slept under that masking tape blanket for about 2 weeks, and until she learned that jumping on the bed was not something she wanted to do. She'd jump on up and she'd stick to it and get all upset and jump back off again. Things like that can be helpful. If the problem is really throughout the entire room, then blocking off the room is probably your best bet. The only one other thing I'd say is sometimes even when these seem behavioral, they could be due to underlying problems, be it urinary tract infections or bladder stones, and it's always worth looking into those things to make sure that's not what's going on. Because if what your cat is doing is trying to tell you she's got bladder stones, then the poor thing is suffering and it should be checked out.
All right, Ashley, thank you so much. That's a great question, and I love Mike telling that story about the masking tape.
It makes me feel like a very silly person.
This is WNRN's Wake Up Call. I'm Rick Moore. Our guest today, Dr. Mike Feetz from Georgetown Veterinary Hospital. I got a caller on hold. Sherry, bear with me for a second, but the toll-free line is open, 877-WNRN-ROCKS. And we're here today because of businesses like Blue Ridge Mountain Sports, celebrating 40 years as your local one-stop source for outdoor gear, apparel, and footwear. Fall apparel now landing at Blue Ridge. You can get ready for the autumn air with lightweight fleece jackets from Patagonia and the North Face. You can find Blue Ridge Mountain Sports at Barracks Road here in Charlottesville. They have two locations in Richmond. For more information, it's brms.com. And Drew Thompson just walked in the room. He's here for Les Temps Purdue at noon. That's the best of 80s and 90s alternative. Drew brings you the roots of alternative because you can't understand where we are without first knowing where we've been. Take a trip to the times gone by with Les Temps Purdue only on WNRN. All right, we have Sherry from Charlottesville. Hi, Sherry.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well. Your question for Dr. Mike Feetz.
Yes, I have a Shih Tzu, a female Shih Tzu that I got from a reputable breeder, and she's always scratching. She doesn't scratch to the point where she bleeds, but she constantly chews and scratches on herself.
Yeah.
She recently had a reaction at the groomers where she had bumps all over her, and the vet put her on and a histamine for 10 days.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the best 10 days of her life and my life. So I recently have tried using over-the-counter Zyrtec children's to maybe thinking that might help relieve her normal itching, and it didn't.
Yeah.
So we've put her back on the antihistamine, but I'm worried about long-term effects, and is there anything else that I can give her? I do everything from the oatmeal bath to all of those things that I've tried.
Yeah, and allergies are common in dogs in general, especially these little dogs. You can use antihistamines frequently, and as long as they're being used at the right dose, I mean, Benadryl is the most common, and as long as it's being used at the right dose, the side effects are generally none. I mean, you can see a little bit of sedation in some dogs. If the dose is correct, usually it won't be too bad. If it works, then I'd say go for it. Often in these dogs, it just doesn't have enough kick to do it. You know, it may have resolved the hives that you saw last time, but it may not be enough in the long run. Depending on the dog, depending how bad the symptoms are, and I'm glad this was asked because it's a good follow-up to the question earlier about the fungal infections on the skin. You know, working up allergies to a greater degree may be worth it, depending on how bad the symptoms are. And that may involve things like hypoallergenic diet trials, which can be very frustrating because they're trial and error, and the response can be over weeks to months, or even next steps like allergy testing and allergy shots. It's a long and difficult road to go down for some dogs, but if the symptoms are bad enough to justify it, then that may be a direction you'll want to end up going.
Thanks, Sherry. Sherry, I appreciate the question.
All right, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
All right, next up we have a call from Lexington. Peggy, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
A question for Dr. Mike Feetz.
Well, first, Dr. Mike, I have to disagree with you about the keeping cats indoors all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I've had cats all my life, and right now I live on a farm, so that's different than living in the city. I have 9 cats, 1 dog, 3 horses. 4 of my cats are strictly outside. 5, they've scratched a hole in the screen, and they come indoors and outdoors.
Mm-hmm.
But I only have 1 that I think would stay indoors all the time. I think the others would be miserable
mm-hmm.
if they had to stay inside. But that said, I do think there are some problems with, you know, outdoor cats, and one of them is that my cats are mousers.
Mm-hmm.
So they find the rodents, the moles, the voles, the mice and stuff like that. But what I worry about is that I know that they get worms from eating the rodents.
Sure.
And I worry that about wormers, about how strong they are and how often you can give them
mm-hmm.
because I'll notice the tapes and stuff.
Sure. Yeah, the dewormers as a class are some of the safest drugs we use in animals, so I wouldn't worry too much about their potency or side effects. They can be used fairly frequently without any trouble at all, and certainly you're right. You know, being outdoors puts them at risk of parasites. Whether or not you manage it with just routine deworming throughout the year or check stool samples fairly frequently, I usually leave to an owner's discretion. The one hang-up there, you mentioned tapeworms specifically. Tapeworm is very good at evading detection on the tests that most hospitals run, and as a result, you may miss it if it's there. Worms are certainly a concern for outdoor cats, and it's something I'd follow up on fairly frequently. Most people will deworm the cats 2 or 3 times a year, and then otherwise, as symptoms dictate. One of the problems with outdoor cats is since they are outdoors, a lot of owners won't notice the symptoms. You know, it's hard to notice diarrhea in an animal that, you know, never defecates into a box, and that's part of where the, you know, veterinary recommendations to keep them indoors come from. You know, outdoor cat cases can be very difficult to work up because most of the questions about are you seeing this symptom are met with I don't know, and that does make things very difficult to figure out in those cases.
Peggy, thanks for the call. It's nice to know that the Lexington crowd is still listening to us. Let's see, I see somebody else online. It is 11:57 on the wake-up call. This is WNRN Charlottesville and WNRS FM Sweetbriar Amherst Lynchburg. And, Mike, we have a question. What does Dr. Feetz think about pet insurance? Do you recommend it?
I think it's worth looking into.
I can speak as someone who's paid a heck of a lot this year. Gosh, pet insurance might have worked well for Lazarus.
Yeah, you know, pet insurance, I think, for owners always feels like a gamble. And like any kind of insurance, you've got to go in before you know that you're going to need it. And it's very easy to, in retrospect, say, I should have gotten it. I believe officially, last I saw a real study of this, most people with pet insurance end up either breaking even or actually spending a little bit more. And I think that may partly just be due to the fact that very few people have it. And when you've got a small pool of insured, obviously the risk doesn't get spread out as effectively. And I think it you know, changes the cost structure of it. I find large breed owners seem to appreciate it more just because large breed dogs are the ones that are prone to running around and blowing out their knee.
Bad hips and things.
And, you know, for that reason, they seem to appreciate it. You know, you'll have large breed dogs are the ones where you'll have a healthy 2-year-old dog that suddenly needs orthopedic surgery and that can be expensive. It's very individual. When clients ask me this at work, we'll kind of just, you know, look at the overall pile of risks we expect that dog to have and compare it. it. What I'll often suggest, and I fully recognize that the suggestion might sound crazy in a you know difficult economic time, but if you're considering spending money on insurance, and you're not sure that you want to, the other option is price out some plans, and then rather than giving that money to an insurance company, putting it aside and saving it for medical treatment for the dog. If it turns out you didn't need it, then you end up with a pile of money at the end. And if you did need it, then you're glad you have it.
All right. Thank you so much for that last question. The hour is up, Mike.
How can that be?
I'm not sure. Someone must have moved the clock forward because I was loving this last little batch of questions. I have all this other stuff. Now, you've written an article in the SIVA Weekly.
Mm-hmm.
And our conversation was that you hope to have an article monthly.
Yeah, about monthly. We're gonna look at a schedule and try and get something in there now and then. I'm very excited to have the opportunity. They've been great to work with.
Well, now I have a whole bunch of topics here that were on my list we didn't get to. Visits to the emergency vet. Do pets actually have a personality, or is this really just anthropomorphism?
Of course they do. How can anyone look at Lazarus over here and say animals don't have a personality?
Well, I don't know. tips for taking your animal to the vet, sort of the insider version on, look, things would be easier for everybody if we had some of these tips for you. And we didn't even get to the one that I was really uncomfortable talking about, which is euthanasia and some of those more dramatic and difficult questions. Mm-hmm. I hope that you'll get to some of those topics in your articles.
I probably will, and I'm sure I'll be back here sometime soon.
I hope so. Mm-hmm. Thanks to everyone who called. Drew Thompson up next with Les Temps-Perdue. Next week, more of a laid-back. We'll have folks from storytelling, my friends Jen Hoffman-Jones and Joel Jones being here, and we'll have people telling stories about their life more in a theatrical sense. Thanks so much for calling in today. Have a great day, folks.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news. On newsstands Thursday, the wake-up call is also supported by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, homegrown since 1982. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@aol.com or wakeupcall@wnrn.org. The Wake Up Call is produced by Sean McCord. Tune in next Sunday morning at 11 for The Wake Up Call, only on WNRN.